Okay. Well, I'm very pleased that the organisers of this meeting invited me along, although I think I'm probably at the rather extreme end of the interests of the group here. I'm not going to talk about anything really that's going to be very helpful in developing new understanding about ocean waves. I'm not going to even show you a new technique for measuring ocean waves, although it may be new to one or two of you. I'm not going to talk about any new ways in which we have interpreted the data from these radar systems, although I'll briefly describe how we do that. I'm just going to show you some new data from a recent deployment, which is continuing as it happens, to give you some indication about the accuracy of the measurements, to give you some indication about the problems with the measurements, and perhaps to stimulate some interest in the sorts of things that we might do with the measurements in the future. So, the system that I'm talking about in this talk is the Pisces HF radar system, which was developed in the UK. This system was developed specifically to make long-range measurements of waves and currents. So the aim is to make measurements out to the order of 100 kilometres from the coast. In order to do that, you have to have quite low spatial resolution, so we make measurements with the order of 15-kilometre bin sizes, if you like, on the surface of the sea. And this just shows you the receive array. It's quite a big piece of kit, and this is the transmitter array, which goes up to here, and there's quite a tall man standing underneath it there to give you some indication of the scale of operation that's required to do this. The measurements we're doing are part of a trial for DEFRA, which is a UK government agency which is responsible for wave monitoring around the UK and is developing a wave monitoring network and is deciding whether to include HF radar systems within that network. So the trial's taking place here on the west coast of the UK. This is Wales, this is Devon and Cornwall, if you're familiar with the area. It's rather an old-fashioned radar system in some respects, in that it has fixed beams. A lot of the HF radar systems, which some of you may be more familiar with, do digital beamforming and are therefore able to provide measurements over a wide area continuously. In this case, we have to switch from beam to beam, so we have to dwell for 20 minutes or so on each beam, and we can only make the measurements that I'm going to talk about, the directional wave measurements, at the intersections between those beams. So there are some time differences that breed some uncertainties in the measurements that we make in here. But in general, we make measurements across this area over a period of an hour. And we have up to 36 measurements per hour of the directional spectrum. And there's a wave buoy here, which I'm going to use to give you some indication of the accuracy of these measurements. These measurements are being made continuously in real time. The data has been collected at the radar sites. It's sent by FTP to Sheffield. Our computer picks it up and does all the processing and then delivers the data to the website within 10 minutes of having received it. And this is the sort of data you would see if you were to take a look at the website last Friday. This map shows wave height and wind direction. On this occasion, the wave heights were down at around 2 meters. With wind direction in this case, because we are able to measure winds with these radar systems as well. Wind direction pointing towards the north east. This shows peak wave height and direction that we obtain from the directional spectrum. And on the right, we're also able to measure current speed and direction. So with this instrument, you can get combined measurements of waves and currents and wind direction, and ultimately, when we've solved the problems, wind speed. We see wave direction because we're actually measuring the directional spectrum. This is a directional spectrum measured at this location here. So this is directional, I've plotted it here as directional frequency spectrum. We're actually measuring the directional wave number spectrum. And this contains components, this one here propagating towards the north east. And then there's a shorter wave component in this particular case propagating towards the east. There's another location, slightly different directional spectrum. This is to give an indication about the spatial variation that we can measure with these systems. And then finally, we have one up here near the coast, where you can see the dominant waves now propagating towards the coast. The ranges here, you can see this is 110 kilometers from the radars, both radar systems, 60 kilometers, and this one is 30 from one and 80 from the other system. Peak wave height is simply the equivalent of significant wave height, but just obtained over a 10 millihertz band around the peak. I'm going to quickly rush through the ways in which we can obtain these measurements before I show you the accuracy of them. The physical principles that enable us to do this are, first of all, the Doppler effect. The radio waves are going to be scattered by ocean waves. Ocean waves are moving. That changes the frequency of the backscattered radio wave, and that allows us to detect waves on the surface. Ocean wave dispersion, so all waves travel at different speeds. That allows us to distinguish different types of waves on the surface. And Bragg scattering, that's the actual process that's going on between the radio wave and the ocean wave, enabling us to make this measurement. So first order, that's just a schematic showing you Bragg scattering, which I won't spend any time on. But the theoretical result says that the backscatter that we receive should contain two components which are related to the wavelengths of waves, the amplitude in the spectrum of waves with half a radio wavelength. And as you can see there, there's a dispersion relation for ocean waves in finite depth water. And we measure currents by measuring the difference between this phase speed and the actual one that we measure. Second order, we're looking at any combination of two waves that satisfy the Bragg scattering relationship. But because these waves are generated by two different wavelengths, then they have a different phase speed, and therefore we can see that separate them in our power spectrum of the backscattered signal. The theoretical basis for our directional wave measurements is based on the work of Barrick over a number of years, essentially doing a perturbation analysis both of the electromagnetic field and of the hydrodynamic field, and matching the two and coming up with this equation here, which contains on the left-hand side the power spectrum of the backscattered signal, and on the right-hand side the directional spectrum, which is the quantity that we want to actually measure. And this quantity in here describes all the complicated electromagnetic and hydrodynamic interactions to second order. And to obtain our measurement, we have to invert that integral equation, which is precisely what we do in the 10 minutes between receiving the data and putting the results up on the website. I'm not going to talk about the method that we use for inverting that data today. One problem that arises is that these equations, while they seem to work pretty well in low sea conditions, in high sea conditions, then there's differences between what Barrick's equations predict that we should be seeing and what we are actually measuring. And you can see that in this picture on the left. Here the radar is looking into the wind direction. The wave height here is just 3 meters. This is actually a measurement using a different radar system at a higher radio frequency. And you can see this quite big discrepancy here between what the model's predicting, which is the red line, and what the radar is measuring, which is the black line on here. Whereas if in the second case, where the radar would happen to be looking perpendicular to the waves, you can see that the model and the backscatter look very similar. So there's a problem with Barrick's equations associated with the more energetic waves on the sea surface that we haven't resolved, that we are in the process of trying to resolve, and I was hoping to have brought some preliminary results with me, but I'm afraid we haven't quite got to that point yet. However, for this particular trial, we're operating at low HF radar frequencies, 5 to 11 megahertz. The ones I just showed you were measurements at 25 megahertz, where that limitation in Barrett's equation is more serious. So we're expecting in this case to get better performance in high C states than we have shown in previous work. However, we have to, in order to do this inversion, we have to linearize the problem, and when we linearize it at these lower radio frequencies, we have to, the compromise is that we have a smaller frequency range in our measurements. So we're only able to measure up to about 0.2 hertz, long waves in other words, whereas previously we were making measurements up to 0.3 hertz. And perhaps I'll say a little bit later on about bimodality and the capability of measuring it today, Jeff. And the other problem is that at these high radio frequencies, the second order signal is lower. It's therefore more difficult to measure in low conditions unless you've got a very, very high signal-to-noise radar. And for this particular trial, for this particular radar, then we found that we can't measure waves at wave heights below about a meter. I won't talk about the last. The comparisons I'm going to show you are all at that site where the wave buoy was, which is 60 kilometers from each of the radars. It's a directional wave rider. It provides us with wave spectra every half hour. Sadly, it didn't last very long. It was only on site for about a month, and then it disappeared. It was found sometime later on a beach in Ireland. Has now been recovered and repaired and is about to be redeployed. This, of course, is an advertisement for using radar systems which are located on the coast and don't suffer from this sort of problem. If anything goes wrong with them, you can just drive down there and fix it, and it's ready straight away. Anyway, we've got parameters, for example, significant wave height from that buoy, and parametric spectra, because, of course, wave buoys don't measure the full directional spectrum. And we also have Met Office wave model data, that's UK Met Office wave model data that we can use for comparison, but we only have parameters, for example, wave height from that. This what? Sorry, this what? No, we're just comparison. We're just making direct comparisons of the measurements that we make with the radar, yeah. Okay, let me start off by talking about the accuracy in the frequency spectrum. This picture up here, if you just focus on this one, I'm just going to a little movie that goes far too fast for you to see very much. But it'll show you the change in the frequency spectrum here during the period of the month when the buoy was in place. And I'm going to come back later on to talk about the direction and the directional spectrum, which is down here. But if you choose to, you can, of course, focus on those as you look at this. Yes, the second panel is the mean direction as a function of frequency. So it's an integration of this essentially weighted by angle. But I want you to focus on this one to start off with, because I just want to show you the justify these comments that I've made here. So, if I can get this right. I'm going to keep stopping it so you can see how good or how bad the data is at different times. There's an example of a bimodal spectrum in frequency measured by the buoy. The buoy is the blue one and the radar is the black one. And basically what you can see, I hope, is that the wave buoy maximum is quite often larger than the radar one, and that the radar sometimes has additional peaks, but there's generally qualitative agreement between the two. These are the important things, the differences in there. So let's come out of there, and I'll come back to that in a moment. So let's just focus now on the accuracy in the frequency spectrum. And the first thing to look at is the wave height comparison. So this is a comparison of wave heights during the period, the month of February, when the buoy was in place. The vertical scale here goes from 0 to 10 meters. So we had events going up to about 7-meter wave height. The black on here is the radar measurements. The blue is the buoy. And the red
bottle.
The red is the model. And on the right you can see the scatter plot of the data compared with the boy and the scatter plot of the radar data compared with the model. And this shows you some of the statistics associated with that. But the thing I want to draw your attention to is these occasional large overestimated wave height measurements from the radar, and those are associated with those extra peaks that I was showing you in the frequency spectrum just now. If we focus now just on the spectral peak, and this is now the peak wave height that I was explaining before, is associated with just measuring a significant wave height associated with the vicinity of the peak in the spectrum, and you can see that the radar and the wave buoy are again in general agreement, apart from the low amplitude cases down here, where the radar is tending to overestimate the amplitude in the peak. This is looking now at those were I moved on to the long waves there. This is the long wave part of the spectrum. Again, you see reasonably good agreement during the peak of the storm, but differences in the... There's no red line on the left panel because the Met Office didn't provide us with this particular piece of data. And here we're looking at the 0.1 to 0.2 hertz band, and again you can see reasonable agreement. Some overestimation here in the 0.1 to 0.2 hertz band in these higher sea conditions. This again is associated, I think, with the limitations in Barrick's theory that I've mentioned before. So the high amplitude cases in this case are linked to the limitations in the theory. Now if we look at the direction, again I'm going to go through this movie and stop it and start it so you can see how good or how bad the directions are. Sometimes quite a lot of disagreements, sometimes not bad in the comparisons. Again, there's some noise in the radar data here, but you can see that these range of frequencies look okay. At the bottom, I'm showing you the radar measured directional frequency spectrum. This is actually what we're measuring. These things are all obtained from this measurement. And on here, the only thing I can compare as far as the boy is concerned is the peak, which is shown with a square in there. You probably won't be able to see that. And the direction, the peak direction measured by the boy, which is shown by an arrow on here. In this particular example, the peak in the boy spectrum is exactly the same, almost exactly the same as the peak frequency in the radar, and the directions are also almost exactly the same. So if I just run through a few of those and you focus attention on the bottom panel now, here you see that there is the buoy, and it's slightly shifted from the peak in the radar measurements. Again, but sometimes they line up pretty well. But what you see in these pictures often are additional features in the radar measurements that, for example, up here, that don't appear to be present in the buoy measurements. And it's those additional features that tend to generate the noise, both in the mean direction of the function frequency and in the frequency spectrum itself. So here we have a comparison now of peak direction. Now we have model estimates, and you can see there's a lot of noise in the radar measurements associated with the fact that we get those additional peaks from time to time in the directional spectrum, and here we're just picking out whatever the peak happens to be, and that introduces these rather noisy comparisons. What we're trying to do is partition our directional spectrum in order to identify particular features of the directional spectrum that we can associate with wind seas, with swell, and possibly therefore isolate the noisy parts of the spectrum. We've used two different methods for this. Originally, we had a method that was developed by a student of mine, which we developed in this way because originally we did all the inversions on a non-uniform wave number grid, and that caused problems for more standard techniques of partitioning. Now we use the method developed by my colleague Jim Green, which is a simpler method because we now have uniform grid application for our inversion procedure. Anyway, I'm going to show this with one example here. On the left, you can see the panel I was showing you before. This is a frequency spectrum, this is a mean direction, and this is the directional spectrum. This is the same directional spectrum plotted in a different way now with direction across the bottom and frequency in the vertical axis, but the features are the same in each case. The picture on the right, though, shows the automatic partitioning of that spectrum. And first of all, we've got wind waves that we can see both in the radar and the buoy measurements. We've got swell in here, which we can see in both the radar and the buoy measurements, the buoy being in blue again, just to remind you on here. But we've got a number of other features, as I was mentioning before, in this particular spectrum. This is a particularly bad example, which is why I picked it. We've got a feature here which doesn't appear to be represented in the buoy at all, and it gives us this little peak that you can see there in the frequency spectrum. And then we've got another feature over here which is almost 180 degrees opposed to the wind wave part of the spectrum. These features could either be due to noise, due to ships, because at the moment we don't have a new way of eliminating the ships from the radar echo, and of course the radar can see anything and not just waves. Or it could be a real wave feature that's not represented in the buoy measurements, of course. We're doing this partitioning automatically, but we don't have an automatic algorithm to assign the partitions as yet. We're hoping to do this because we've of course got temporal, spatial and spectral coverage, and therefore we can try to use some continuity arguments to identify these particular features. But I'm just going to now show you some results quickly that use the buoy data to identify the peak partition. So really what I'm showing you here is that the buoy, that we do have a feature in our directional spectra which is consistent with the buoy data. So here, this is a comparison now of peak period. Peak period is quite a noisy parameter to measure anyway. But on here, the radar, the buoy is in blue, as before. The black is the largest partition from the radar measurement. So that's the one we can automatically identify. But the red is the one where I've selected the partition which is closest to the buoy measurements. And this shows you here the comparison of peak period in that case. And that's, for peak period, that's quite a good comparison. Similarly, for peak direction, we can do the same thing. And just to remind you, before we did the partitioning, we had this rather noisy comparison. After the partitioning, we're getting much better agreement in peak direction. I quickly want to show you just a couple of cases where we've identified differences between the Met Office wave model and the measurements, both buoy measurements and radar measurements. Yeah. First of all, swell-dominated seas. This is a period here of swell-dominated seas. You can see that here's a comparison of the frequency spectrum, and you can see it's a very low frequency swell situation here. And you can see that the radar and the wave buoy, although there's some noise in the radar data, the radar and the wave buoy are showing much higher wave heights than the Met Office model. And we've seen that in a number of different earlier trials as well. So the model appears to underestimate wave height in these conditions. That could be, of course, to do with winds in the Atlantic rather than the wave model itself. I can't possibly comment on that. The other one is in fetch-limited conditions. And we had an example in late April. We don't have buoy data for this, of course. But here's this period here of several days where we had offshore winds 12 to 15 meters per second, and here's the wave height comparison at 30 kilometres, at 60 kilometres, and at 80 kilometres. And if you look at the 60 kilometre one, you can see that the model is overestimating wave height compared to the buoy, compared to the radar, whereas at 80 kilometres they're more aligned. So there's an indication there that the model is overestimating growth rates. And as I said, we've had previous examples, previous trials where this feature has been also evident. What I haven't done in this particular case is looked at the wave spectra to see if we can identify any of the fetch limited features that we were hearing about just now, so that might be an interesting thing to do. So to finish then, we've been operating these radars nearly continuously now for over 6 months, and the data is available on this website here. The directional spectra, although they're sometimes contaminated with noise, they provide wave parameters with useful accuracy, and we're anticipating that these radar systems will be used in the wave monitoring network in the future. We can go to higher radio frequencies to get better availability in low sea states, but that is at the expense of limiting the range of these measurements. We're proposing to improve the reliability of the parameter estimates by partitioning and also by some radar hardware and signal processing improvements. And I'll just leave you again with this exciting little movie. Thank you.